Live from Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol, Connecticut, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're here today to talk about something that's been emerging and evolving over years in Connecticut culture, not just in Connecticut, but all around the nation. We're talking about beer, but not just any beer. Craft beer, craft brewing, the appreciation that many people have for the great beers that are being brewed right here in our state. We're going to be talking with brew masters, people who make brews that are shared by many thousands of people around Connecticut. We're going to be talking about the business as well, and we're going to be talking about some of the history and the folklore around beer. We want to start first with Will Siss, who's a beer expert and historian. He is, among other things, a beer snob, he calls himself. And he writes a column in the Waterbury Republican American. He also has a book called Connecticut Beer, A History of Nutmeg State Brewing. Will, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So first of all, maybe you can just talk a little bit about the history of beer in Connecticut. It's not just a new thing, right? It goes back not 10 years, 20 years, but hundreds of years.
Right. It was here from the beginning. Being a colony, and there were plenty of people from England that were involved, they brought their love of ale. And so even from the very beginning in New Haven, you had people making ale, particularly at home, but also for the public. And this was for many reasons. One, it was part of their tradition. But two, it was actually safer to drink than water.
It was safer to drink than water?
Right. So you were boiling the water to create the ale, and therefore that was killing a lot of the germs that would have made people sick.
So you could have just boiled water, but you're like, if you're going to boil water anyway, might as well make beer out of it, right?
Go all the way. Absolutely.
So this was a part of it. I would assume that some of the founding fathers, the people that we read about or we have statues of around Connecticut, were also brewers themselves.
Sure. One in Connecticut that comes to mind is Isaiah Putnam, who was involved in the Revolutionary War, but also had his own tavern, the General Wolf, out in the Brooklyn, Connecticut area. And so he was one of the many figures. But just like a lot of the people who would gather in taverns, much like this one at Firefly, to talk about revolution and also just to talk about the issues of the day, a lot of the time it was done over a beer.
So there was the history here in Connecticut of the gathering place, the place where people would get together, talk about the politics of the day, sometimes including politics that would have a real impact around the colonies.
Sure. I'm sure that the 18th century John Dankowski was there, you know, kind of telling everybody, you know, maybe you should consider this, you should consider that. And just like any other period of our history, beer played an important role. And what would happen over time was that there would be waves of immigration that would come in to Connecticut, and then also really bolstered beer as the drink of the state.
Yeah, there really weren't any people with the last name of Dankosky until those waves of immigration, I can tell you. We didn't come over on the Mayflower.
Gotcha.
I can tell you that for sure. So let's move forward a little bit. I mean, we got around the time of the early 20th century. We get to the point of course, prohibition across the United States. Yes. How did that affect Connecticut?
The dark days of prohibition.
Yeah.
From 1920 to 1933, it had a very negative effect on Connecticut brewers. While there were several that mostly were connected to the cities of Connecticut, when prohibition came around, they had to keep a very low profile, which meant that they to stay viable, they had to do things like make sodas or make near beer, which would be very low alcohol beer. And unfortunately, they did not all survive. Most did not. A couple of them that did lasted until the 40s or 50s. The one that was the real hero of the group that did their best in New Haven was Hull's Brewing, but they succumbed to pressure and ultimately closed their doors in 1977.
One of the things we read is that amongst the states, and if you took a look at how people felt, how people were actually polled on the issue of prohibition, Connecticut was actually a place that said, we'd actually like to drink more than many others.
Absolutely. Connecticut and Rhode Island really were not at all happy with the idea of national prohibition. Connecticut had already tried something like the local option law, which they had tried in Maine, in which towns could vote to say whether they would be a quote-unquote dry town or not. And so what you would find is that a lot of the rural towns would be dry towns, and then the cities would stay pretty damp in comparison. So and then this carried on, and you know they had to submit to the law of the land, but when it came to enforcing it, there are many tales of people continuing to drink, believe it or not, during Prohibition.
Of course, one of the things we always hear about here in Connecticut is the so-called blue laws, right? We've had all these unusual laws that govern how and when we can buy beer. Not that terribly long ago, you couldn't go out to a liquor store, a package store, as we call them here, on a Sunday and get beer, but this has all changed. What's the history of that? Because it seems like, it took a lot longer for us to get on that train than the rest of the country.
Well, I would venture to say that some of this had to do with money. People want to make money. People want to drink beer. And so, therefore, a lot of these laws were very practical. They were good for the economy, and they were good for business. In terms of people that would say, no, we need to keep to the old standards, their voice just, eventually was drowned out by everybody else, myself included, that would say, you know what, we need freedom when it comes to making choices about the beer, where we buy it, how we buy it.
And we report on this. What is it, Bridgewater, right, was the last town to be a dry town in the state?
Yeah, and they have actually voted to become a damp town. They're able to become a town that has a package store. So those days are all gone. We are now officially looking back and saying that wasn't an era, and we're at the end of that era.
We're at the end of that era. As we talk with Will Siss, he's going to be our guide through craft beers and beers across Connecticut. There are so many great breweries, and we're going to be meeting some of the brewers in just a few minutes here on Where We Live. We're at Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol, Connecticut. We want to welcome in Kurt Cameron, who's president and CEO of Thomas Hooker Brewery, as well as the president of the Connecticut Brewers Guild. And Kurt, welcome to the program. Thanks so much. How are things going in the craft brew industry? I mean, you helped to start this in Connecticut. You were one of the real first to not only have your product in a space, but also in bars and restaurants and on the shelves. How are things going for you right now?
We're doing quite well. I think when I took over the brewery, and it had been around in various iterations since 96, first as a brew pub, and then we turned it into a production brewery. I think there was maybe five, breweries in the state. I'm proud to say that in our guild now, I think we have about 30 different breweries. Connecticut as a state, as compared to the rest of the country, I think is 35th in breweries per capita. We're a little bit late to the game, but we're coming on strong. So it's a great scene in Connecticut, and there's a lot of pride.
35th, but it seems as though there have been so many in just the last couple years. I mean, how can that be? Why are we so far behind, do you think?
Well, I think Connecticut, by its nature, is somewhat conservative when it comes to a lot of these things. I'm happy to say that some of the legislation is starting to loosen up a little bit to make it a little bit easier to open breweries. And I think it's just a general acceptance of and pride for locally brewed product here in the state.
Was there legislation that made it difficult? I mean, we've heard about this for a lot of agricultural producers, whether or not you're growing chickens and you want to sell them locally or anything else, there have been impediments. Is this something that has gotten in our way in the past?
Well, one of the things that the Guild, which is, all of us breweries together, have really focused on is some legislative changes in the state. One of the things is the ability for a brewery to actually do something like this. I mean, this is a fantastic venue. Until a couple years ago, you couldn't do it. Production breweries couldn't sell beer by the pint. And this is one of the things that makes it economically feasible to do these kind of things. Just selling through wholesalers can be a tough gig. To be able to sell some of the stuff retail, like these guys are doing, helps financially make it a feasible enterprise.
How has that changed, Will? Because it seems as though some of these things loosening up have allowed this explosion of all these breweries.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there were certain kinds of people that would buy beer at breweries to try to fill up their growlers, or there would be certain people that would track them down at certain bars, but places like this, that like Firefly Hollow, that allow people to gather and to talk and get to know one another, really opens up the amount of people that then become future customers. And so the community of beer lovers is growing all the time.
You know, it's interesting. We may be talking about Connecticut being a little late to the game. I was just out in Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago, and it's amazing. So there's a place where 20 years ago, you actually couldn't walk in and order a beer like you would any place else,
right,
because of some of the really restrictive laws. Now they've got this great craft brew scene, but they still have some very restrictive laws out there that make it difficult. So it seems as though, Kurt, we're coming along, at least here in Connecticut, in this land of steady habits.
Yeah, and one of the things, as a matter of fact, in Utah is a funny place, because I can remember skiing there years ago, and we would literally UPS beer out to ourselves before we got there to the hotel. But in Connecticut, one of the other legislative changes that just took place this session was the ability for us to actually sell at farmers markets, believe it or not. So that was a piece of legislation that got pushed through. Again, offering up just one more avenue for small craft breweries to actually vend their product directly and really to take part in a great kind of homegrown sort of
Well, do you feel like it's part of this whole movement where you have people going to farmers markets, they want to know where their food is coming from, they want to go to the local butcher? I mean, is craft brewing part of that whole thing, do you think, Kurt?
Absolutely. The whole concept of buying locally and supporting local business, I think, is fantastic. There was a precedent. I mean, there's all the states around us could do it, and what they found was it not only helped small craft breweries, but actually helped the farmers markets, right? Because it's one more thing that tends to be a little bit more fun to do with some of these farmers markets.
We have found that over the years, if we want to do a remote broadcast for where we live, if it's someplace that serves beer, it's amazing how people show up.
And I know.
When they don't serve beer, people kind of don't.
You know, if we just had chicory and escarole, people wouldn't stop by.
People wouldn't stop by. Yeah. It's amazing. What else can you tell us about the Brewers Guild? What exactly does it do, Kurt?
Sure. So the Brewers Guild is just a membership of all the breweries here in the state. We meet about every month and a half, and it allows us to come together, discuss ideas, discuss legislative changes, discuss things like events that we all want to take part in. And it's just a great place to share ideas. A lot of new people can come that are thinking about opening craft breweries, and when they become an associate member, they have access to people that have done it, and they can decide whether they want to or not. But it's just a great forum for us to all get together. And it's, you know, even though we're all theoretically in competition, there's definitely a camaraderie amongst the group. And I think everybody wants to see everybody else succeed. Because as a group, I think if we're all successful, the industry is.
I think that's an important piece of this, Will, too, is really if you have 10, 20, 30 breweries all trying to get the same sort of craft beer customers, you would think that these businesses would be at each other's throats, but instead they support each other. It's a very different sort of atmosphere, it seems.
They do, and I think they all sort of benefit from those that have come before. And so they lean on each other like you would another relative. And so there really is a familial kind of support there. But what you're also finding is that they are not all making the same kinds of beers. They aren't afraid to kind of find these niches for themselves to set themselves apart from the growing field.
I know that you've profiled Thomas Hooker Brewery. What can you tell us about the work that they've done? Because, again, they were sort of on the forefront of a lot of this work.
Yes. Thomas Hooker has been the kind of brewery that has really become the one that you introduce people who are new to Connecticut to, and you say, well, if you want a brewery that has got some staying power and that has got a nice rich history, you got to try what they put out. And so, for example, I am a big fan of their Doppelbock, which is one that comes out, I believe, seasonally. But they've got all kinds of great beers that really go for almost any palate.
So Kurt, before I let you go, what happens next with Thomas Hooker? As you've grown over the years, what's the next thing for a brewery that's bigger maybe than some of these smaller craft breweries that have up and come over the last few years?
Yeah, well, you know, we don't necessarily manage toward a specific size or something like that. What we try to do is get up every day, you know, make quality product and determine what the right road is for us. The industry is changing like crazy right now. So I think what we see is a lot of people kind of expanding geographically. We're kind of holding back on that right now. So we've expanded. We've taken over a couple buildings near our building, and we're going to kind of lay back a little bit, see where everything's going, and try to make the right choice once we mature a little bit more.
I have to ask you, because this flows into a lot of the other programs that we do on the air, are you going to be part of this big development with a baseball stadium in downtown North in Hartford?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Our desire is to get back to Hartford, absolutely. I mean, that's where the company had begun. That's really our namesake is down there. It's got to be the right deal for our company, and we're working through the details on that. So we have our fingers crossed that'll happen.
Well, I'll say very good luck to you on that, because thank that you. Could be huge for what you do. And I want to thank you so much, not for all the support that you've just done for us, but for everything that you've done for craft brewing in the state. Thanks so much, Kurt.
Thanks for having me.
Kurt Cameron is president and CEO of Thomas Hooker Brewery in Bloomfield, as well as the president of the Connecticut Brewers Guild. A nice round of applause for Kurt Cameron, one of the really good guys in this business. When we come back from our break, we'll continue with Will Siss. We're also going to bring in some master brewers from other breweries, including this place where we're broadcasting from today, Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol, Connecticut. It's a beautiful space in an old industrial space in one of the great towns in Connecticut. When we come back from this break, more talk about beer where we live. Live from Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol, Connecticut, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking today about craft beer in Connecticut. There's been an explosion of great craft breweries around the state, small breweries, larger breweries, and we're trying to find out a little bit about this industry, and we're going to talk with some master brewers right now. We're also joined by Will Siss, who's the author of Connecticut Beer, A History of Nutmeg State Brewing, and he writes about this for the Waterbury Republican American. Joining me right now is Dana Bork, who's a co-owner and head of brewery operations at Firefly Hollow Brewery in Bristol, Connecticut. This is the place where we are right now. Dana, first of all, thanks so much for having us.
You're really welcome. Appreciate it. It's a pleasure.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got started here?
Well, I actually got started... So prior to being involved with Firefly Hollow, I worked at a small homebrew supply shop in East Hartford called Brew & Wine Hobby. And it was there that I was going to school with the American Brewers Guild. So I was kind of doing part-time work with them. I was going to school. And once I finished up my apprenticeship, I was looking to find a job in the brewing industry. So when we got to a point where I felt comfortable looking for interviews, I told my two employers at the time that I was... giving my notice, and they said, well, you know, if you feel really good about this, why don't we just do it ourselves? And I said, great. Yeah. Sounds excellent.
Yeah, so the place that we are right now, maybe you could describe this space. We have even very recently in our program talked about reclaiming old industrial spaces in the state. Our state is just blessed with a million of these beautiful old 18 and 1900s factory buildings, many of which lost the work that was originally done here and have been reclaimed in one way or another. Maybe you can describe this space and how you came to make beer here.
Yeah, so this originally was a New Departures plant. I believe the building was built in 1917, but don't quote me on that. And we, when we were looking for municipalities to locate to, we started calling around a lot of the... you know, the zoning departments, and talking to the people in town hall about whether they'd be open to having a brewery in town. And so when we came to Bristol, they said, we have some really cool old buildings that we think are going to be really perfect for what you want. And the zoning worked out. And basically this space, to give you an idea what it looks like, is we've got a lot of pipework hanging from the ceilings. There's a lot of old brick. There's a lot of really old infrastructure here. You know, we got these old, I don't even know what you'd call these lights, but they're really cool old fluorescents, you know. But yeah, the whole place really just kind of, it's got a very unique character to it. You feel at home here. It's really fun.
And it's a tap room for your brewery. It's not a restaurant. It's not a brew pub. Maybe you can describe for people who don't understand the difference, because there's different places where you can go get beer in the state, and they're not all exactly the same.
Exactly. So what we do here specifically is we're a brewery first, and we have this tap room space, which is about 1,500 square feet, where people can come in and try the beer that we make in-house. So we invite people to come down. We do flights of beer, so you can try, you know, a 4-ounce sample of everything we do. We also do pints here. We do growlers and squealers to go. But we look at this as a gathering place for the community to really enjoy what we do.
Will, can you talk about that a little bit? Because there is a difference in the way these breweries decide to present their product. You can find more and more Connecticut-made beer on the shelves in cans or bottles or growlers, but you can also go to a number of places, either tap rooms or brew pubs, that have restaurants or maybe no food. So there's a wide range.
That's right. I would say, you know, one of the biggest, definitely the biggest, would be Two Roads in Stratford, where they've got a full working bar. And often times they would have food trucks outside, which is something that we're seeing here at Firefly Hollow and at other breweries as well. If you go to a place like Broadbrook Brewing in East Windsor, what you'll find is a nice tasting room there as well where you can bring your own food. So this is something that is really starting to grow. It's not so much, certainly you've got to have the quality beer, which they do, or else they wouldn't be around, but you've got to have the quality experience of going to the brewery, taking a look at the tanks, seeing how the beer is made, and then hanging out and getting to know people and just feeling at home.
And I think there's also something to these industrial spaces where you feel like you're a little bit off the beaten path. When you pull up here, Danny, you're not exactly sure the first time you come in where the entrance is. And there's something a little bit, you know, Prohibition era, a little bit like, where am I supposed to go to get the beer, which I like.
There's definitely a little bit of that speakeasy kind of feel. Even on the front door here, we just have the kind of inconspicuous logo just marked like, you know, there's beer here if you know what the symbol looks like, you know.
Which is... For the people who are in the know, I want to welcome in Tony Karlowitz, who's a co-founder and brewer at Back East Brewery. Tony, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how and when did you guys get started?
Back East was started by myself and my cousin Ed. The origin of the Back East name actually came from Ed when he was out in San Diego. He moved out there and lived there during the 1990s. And the first question people usually ask is, why did he ever move back here? But he did end up moving back east to Connecticut, so we picked up the Back East name. And in 2006, we got together, both had separate careers going, and weren't really crazy about what we were doing. And we said, well, let's open a brewery. And they're really actually, you know, going back to Hooker, Hooker was open at the time. There weren't really many breweries in the state open, so we started brewing, we started planning, we started talking, researching, figuring out what we wanted to do, figuring out what we were good at, and in 2012 we opened up in Bloomfield. So
that's one of the, I think, key things about the conversation that's so interesting. There's this sense that you and everyone else here is doing something they love to do, but you're also trying to find your way in an increasingly crowded field, right? If everyone was doing exactly the same thing, it wouldn't really work. So how are you trying to be different?
Well, we're trying to brew a lot of traditional styles. We do our own take on kind of those traditional styles, and we're starting to branch out into a few different things as well. So we started with a core lineup of four pretty standard style beers, which are actually all still working really well for us, and they've all kind of have their own good following. But we're adding some new beers to it and trying to start to experiment with some things now. We just finished an expansion, so we have a little more room to kind of play with things. But you know, we do a lot of distribution. We just distribute in Connecticut right now, so it is more just trying to keep up with brewing and keep our beers on the shelves and
well,
restaurants.
What does when you say experimentation, what does that look like? I mean, when you're like, I want to try something new. I mean, how exactly do you do that in the brewing world?
Well, I'll make a confession right now. I'm not one of the brewers. So my partner Ed is one of our brewers, and we also have two other very good talented brewers on our team as well. So it's kind of like what are we looking for? Like what type of beer we're looking for, and we start talking about different types of ingredients and how we're going to brew it. And you know, we've got a couple new things coming out in the next few months that we're pretty excited about. So
Dana, do you do a lot of that? Is there some conversation where you say, we've got to try something new, or I want to try something new? And what does that look like? What does that sound like?
You know, for me, a lot of it starts with a flavor concept, and I tend to work backwards. So you don't get the sort of inspiration to make something new and unique every day, but when you do, you kind of put it on the back burner, hash out the details, and over time you start to develop what the recipe is going to look like, how you're going to work it into the brewing rotation, and a lot of times it'll be sparked by some new ingredients that you've been exposed to. So right now is a great time for the hop market. There's these hop breeding programs that have really gone full tilt lately, and they're putting out these new hop varieties that are just bursting with these new flavors. Like, 10 years ago, you didn't see a lot of these really big tropical fruit, mango, passion fruit flavors that we see in some of these newly developed hop varieties. And so there might be something that comes out that you say, wow, that's really cool, and it's going to work great with these other hops. And you just kind of develop this flavor in your mind and work back.
I want to welcome in Aaron Simoncini, who's the owner and head brewer at Beard Brewery. Thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Well, hello. Thanks again for having me.
No, I'm really glad you could come in. Tell me about your brewery. How did you get your start?
So we started as one of the smallest in the state. Not necessarily the smallest, but on a nano brew basis. So
nano brewery.
Yep. We're talking about 3 barrels at a time or 93 gallons at a time. So super small. Managed to self-finance the gig with my fiance and open on a shoestring budget with a very limited distribution footprint. Essentially no distribution outside of the tasting room. We're kind of still at that point. If you talk about driving pretty far to get somewhere, I had to drive an hour and a half or so to get here today. So we are pretty much as far as you can get away.
And you're in Stonington?
Yeah, Stonington, Connecticut. So as far southeast in the state as you can go. And right on the coast, it's a big tourist destination. So we get a lot of people who do come and visit for more of a destination brewery style. But yeah, just super limited distribution, spotty at best, most people say. But we're trying to get on at some of the better beer bars and restaurants throughout the state. And just recently underwent an expansion. Again, all self-financed, no outside kind of debt financing or service. And we're up to a 7-barrel brewery, so more than double in size.
I have to say, it's so cool to hear about all this expansion, because we talk all the time about, you know, whether or not there's an economic recession on or how long the recession has taken to clear up. And all of you saying that you're expanding and you're trying new things, I mean, that's got to be a little bit of love in there, but it's a business deal that's got to make sense too, and it seems like you have the ability to expand.
So I suppose we should start with my background. I was in finance and accounting previous to the brewing industry, and so I've got my finger on the pulse as far as the books go and supply demand. So we are carefully growing at a rate that we feel very comfortable with. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, you've got 25 bars that want to carry your beer and they'll all sell a 0.5 barrel a week, no problem. But at the same time, we don't want to grow to the point where we become kind of just a staple at different locations. Very small is kind of where we want to stay. We don't really have our eyes as far as becoming a regional or anything like that. Right now I employ 3 other full-time people, including myself, so a fourth, and then 7 part-time employees. So we're making a living for several people, making the beer that we really want to make, and getting it out there on a limited basis to the places that we really think are kind of doing it the best service. So it's a unique kind of line to walk as far as, you know, expansion for the sake of expansion because demand's there and we want to make money, or do we really want to kind of focus and keep things close to home? I mean, I still have a hard time finding myself sitting at a desk for a day because I have to do payroll for my employees. I really like to get my hands dirty. So, again, just a fine line.
Yeah. Is there a beer that you guys are making right now that you love, that you absolutely love?
So the Hobbit Juice Double IPA is personally my favorite. It's a double IPA featuring Nelson Sauvin, grown in New Zealand. So not only is it one of the most difficult hops to get on the market, but it also has one of the most unique flavor profiles. So we really like to get that kind of white wine character, stone fruit character out of this hop and juice it for all that it's worth.
Hobbit Juice?
Hobbit Juice.
Okay, Hobbit Juice. Very good. How about you, Tony? What's the beer that you guys are making right now that you absolutely love?
Well, we have our summer ale out right now. Unfortunately, the way the beer industry works, by the time 4th of July comes by, all the breweries are done brewing their summer beer. So we did a lot of summer ale this year, so that's kind of been my favorite. That's it's a hoppy blonde ale. It's not quite an IPA, but it's very light and crisp and refreshing, and that's brewed with Citra, Simcoe, and Galaxy hops. Galaxy also being a Southern Hemisphere hop from Australia that we really like, and we'll probably try and use that in some of our other beers as well.
So
Dana, I've been drinking a lot of that.
You've been drinking a lot of that. It's good for the summertime. Dana, we're here at your brewery, Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol. So I've actually got a flight in front of me. You can probably tell from how these are laid out what all is here. Can you just explain very quickly what I'm sort of drinking?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, I think we have 7 beers on tap. We're pouring our Penumbra Cream Ale, which is a nice, light, easy drinking, very lightly hopped ale. We also have our Train's Best Bitter, which is it's an English-style pale ale. Nice malt-forward, kind of toffee caramel with just a hint of hops. We also are pouring our Umbra Dark Cream Ale, which is it's kind of inspired by the dark continental lagers of Europe. But it's fermented with an ale yeast, and so you get this nice, kind of smooth, easy-drinking malt profile. We also have our Toadstool Stout, which is one of our flagship beers. Super creamy, roasty, chocolatey. It's like a milkshake and a beer. It's great. And then I think on the end of the flight there, you have the Coneflakes Double IPA, which is another one of our flagships.
So what are some trends that you see, Will, amongst the Connecticut breweries? Because there is such a wide variety, and even from these three breweries that we have right here and Thomas Hooker, who we had on earlier, there's a lot of variety in there. But are there any big trends that you see?
Well, I think one trend that has been going on for a couple of years now is that of the double IPA. So an India Pale Ale is a British style that really ramps it up in terms of the hops. And so it wasn't enough just to say, oh, we have an IPA on as part of our stable, but, hey, let's pump it up to a double IPA or an Imperial IPA. And so New England Brewing Company has certainly been one that has been on the forefront of that one. I think you're also seeing a trend in the opposite direction, though, with session beers. I think you're seeing something that really does kind of sound like it doesn't make sense, but they have what's called a session IPA. And so what you have is something that has that bitterness that you want, has that citrusy, fruity kind of punch, but it is low enough in alcohol, maybe 5%, 5.2, sneaking up to there, that it means that you can have, you know, a couple and not have to, you know, fall down. So Little Heaven is one that I particularly like that comes out of Two Roads, but there are a bunch.
Aaron, do you feel as though you and the work that you do with your brewery or any of the others that you know here in Connecticut are part of some sort of a larger style, or do you feel like you're really striking out on your own every day?
Well, it seems recently that everybody's talking about the Vermont IPA, which is kind of an offshoot of the East Coast IPA. That's kind of the style we've fallen into a bit. We have a ton of double IPAs, a ton of American pale ales, just really hop forward. I mean, that's what everybody is out there thirsting for. Most of our hoppy or hop forward beers definitely outsell our non-hop forward beers, almost 2-1. And it's kind of funny because I might think that, oh, gee, I want to brew this like really nice porter, keep it low in ABV, and put that out there. But then I still get people coming to the door looking for, what's your double IPA? What's got the highest strength? So it's interesting because there's play with how much character each of these beers get based on where they fall kind of in the ABV scale as well as the hopping rates. So really, I just think there's definitely still a trend towards more hoppy, higher ABV, full flavor beer.
Well, one thing I'll just say before we take our break, Dan, is I don't know if this happens to you, but I go into a bar that has this really extensive selection of beers on tap, maybe even a lot of bottled beers, including local beers. And you ask your server, you know, what is there? And they'll give you detailed descriptions of 5 or 6 different beers of a wide range. And then almost invariably, someone will pull up right next to me and say, I'd like a Budweiser. And I guess I just wonder, how does that make you feel as someone who makes one of these craft beers that may very well be there on the tap?
Future customers.
Future customers, really? Well, look, Budweiser very famously put out this crazy commercial around the Super Bowl that said, you know, we don't make that crazy fruit beer, the beer that all those hippies drink, or whatever their ad said. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there are an awful lot of people who just don't get what you're trying to do. How do you make them the future customer?
Well, you know what? For me, at the end of the day, I don't judge people for what they drink. I see people gathering around beer as something cultural, where people can enjoy each other's company. So if I'm at a table with 5 Bud drinkers, I might try to get them to try something new, but at the end of the day, it's because I'm with friends.
Yeah.
So, you may get lucky every now and then where someone will try something and they are absolutely going to love it. And I'll say, we've got a pretty darn good conversion rate with our Toadstool Stout, of all things, where people say, give me something light, give me something easy drinking, Close your eyes. Try this.
I agree with Dana. I think it's just a matter of time. You know, everybody's palate's different, and who am I to judge? But I do sometimes feel it is my responsibility to let them know that, you know, the Budweiser that they're drinking might be better used to shampoo with than to drink, that there are other options available to you, and you should keep your mind open.
Will Siss is the author of Connecticut Beer, A History of Nutmeg State Brewing. He's our guide through craft brewing in the state. I want to thank Dana Bork, who's the co-owner and head of brewery operations at Firefly Hollow Brewery in Bristol, Connecticut. That's where we are today. Thank you so much, Dana.
Thank you, John.
I also want to thank Aaron Simoncini, who is owner and head brewer of Beard Brewery. They're based in Stonington. Thanks so much, Aaron.
Absolutely. Thanks
and
for
also,
having me.
And also Tony Karlowitz, who's co-founder and brewer at Back East Brewery. Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate
your
time.
Thanks, John.
When we come back from our break, we're going to learn more about the Connecticut Beer Trail. We're going to get some questions from our audience as we broadcast here from Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol, Connecticut. This is Where We Live. Live from Firefly Hollow Brewing Company in Bristol, Connecticut, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're thrilled to be at this wonderful place in an industrial facility, an old industrial building, one of many that has been converted to a much better use. Yes, the best possible use, brewing beer for people here in Connecticut, Firefly Hollow Brewing Company. We've met with the brewer here, and we're meeting with people who know a lot about the craft beer industry in Connecticut, including Will Siss, who's the author of Connecticut Beer, A History of Nutmeg State Brewing. He also writes a column for the Waterbury Republican-American, and he's here with us. Also joining us right now is Brian Turner, who's founder of the Connecticut Beer Trail, executive director of the Connecticut Brewers Guild. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So first of all, the Beer Trail, tell us about the history of this. We've known about the Wine Trail for years. It's something we've talked about. What can you tell us about the Beer Trail?
Well, I always like to say it's kind of like the Wine Trail, but a lot better because it's beer. I started it about 5 years ago. During my earlier days, I traveled a lot for business, and when I'd find myself in a strange town in a different state, I'd have nothing to do after work. So I'd go check out a local brewery or brew pub, take a tour, try the beer, talk to the brewmasters. There was always something online to kind of find a good place to go. And I got back to Connecticut, and I realized I had barely explored our own state's beer, so I kind of put the set together for myself initially. Actually, it's kind of funny, my wife had our first child, and I took some time off from work to help her at the house, help the baby, and at night when I finally got everyone to sleep, I'd crack a beer and I'd build the website. And I showed it to a few friends. I said, do you think this is useful? Do you think the brewers would like this? And they said, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead and give it a try. So the first folks I pitched it to were the folks from Thomas Hooker. Kurt was too busy to meet with me. He was doing important executive type stuff. But his lovely assistant Lisa sat down and humored me a little bit and nodded a lot and smiled and said, thanks a lot. We'll get back to you. And I assumed that was a rejection. But a few weeks later, she was kind enough to email me and said, we're on board. And then after that, the brewery started coming on board, getting on the website. And from there, we kind of sprung off a lot of different initiatives and projects to help promote the state's beer.
What's interesting, of course, about a beer trail is you need to have enough breweries to actually have a trail. And not so many years ago, maybe there wasn't a trail. It was a nice little walk around, but now there's a real trail here.
Yeah, when we started, it was more like a beer path. I think we had about five breweries and a handful of brew pubs, and that was about it. Now, if you add up all the breweries, the brew pubs, the contract brewers, the nano brewers, we're over 30. 30 is a nice number we're throwing around right now because, honestly, most of us can't keep track. Seems like every other month a new brewery's popping open, whether it be a small nano or a medium-sized brewery. So between 30 and 40 breweries, and then there's a whole slew of them that are kind of in various stages of development, not quite open yet. So,
how important, Will, is it for something like this to tie together all these breweries? As you've all said, it's hard to keep track of how many people are now brewing in Connecticut, but it seems as though something like a trail helps to knit it all together in a way.
It does, and what really brings it together are their stories. Beyond the fact that they're making some groundbreaking beer, what you'll get on a tour like the one that Brian's describing is that you'll get to know the people behind the beer. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if you go to a brewery, let's say like Relic Brewing, which is in Plainville, you are probably going to meet the guy, Mark, who got his hands dirty making the beer that you are drinking. And so if you have questions, you can ask the source. And I think that's what really brings it all together. And I think that what you'll find also is that there's a variety of experiences to be had along the way that will keep you coming back for more. So you won't go and say, well, I already went to that brewery in January. Well, chances are that brewery has a whole new slew of beers up, and you should go back.
Yeah, and I think something about, Brian, meeting the people who make the product is there is this mystery about how beer is made. I mean, if you don't ever think about it, it's the stuff that comes in the bottle, right? As we were talking about Budweiser before, but if you think about it, you start to think about the chemistry, the almost alchemy that it takes to make this product.
Yeah, you know, for most people, if they haven't been on a brewery tour before and they go on their first tour, for them it's like going to the Willy Wonka chocolate factory. The Oompa Loompas come out with the kegs. Everybody's like, it's magic behind the scenes. They don't get it. But we try to do a little education on these tours, not just give people beer. Most of the breweries in the state do some really excellent educational tours, and they'll tell you the science and the biology behind the scenes. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, it's a good product. And like Will was saying, I think part of the allure of local beer, beyond the awesome product that all these guys are making, are the personalities behind the beer and the environment, the experience you get. That's very different at almost every location. So, for instance, if you come here at Firefly Hollow, you'll meet Dana, who's a character, funny guy, very talented brewer, and he's got an awesome venue here. But he's also been known to wear weird goggles while he's brewing beer, and that was sort of like his calling card, if you will. He didn't wear them today. I'm a little disappointed in him, but everybody's a little bit different. Every venue's a little bit different, and the beer's a little different. But really, it's that hometown feel. The guy or gal who made your beer could be your next-door neighbor. That's kind of cool.
So we have a microphone here, and we would love to hear from our audience. Does anybody have a question or a thought, something to say about Connecticut craft brewed beers? Come on, I know somebody has an idea here. Hi there, what's your name?
My name's Scott. I'm from Sandy Hook. Are there any breweries here in Connecticut that are using local ingredients or regional ingredients?
One of the newer breweries that has opened up is Kent Falls Brewing in Kent. And they're actually a farm brewery, and so I know that they are using some of their own ingredients. They have hop binds, for example, and they also have a working farm. And so that is one to go and check out. Connecticut's landscape is such that it's rather small, and so you need a lot of acreage to have the kinds of, you know, grain or hops that you need to grow. So unfortunately, we aren't getting a lot of local ingredients. But for example, at Relic Brewing, the brewer will use lavender that comes from his own garden to add to a beer. Do you know of any others
there? You know, one kind of a unique way of answering that question is Thomas Hooker. I know for a while they were brewing a limited amount of hops on their own property. But they also made a chocolate truffle stout with the local chocolate company. I can't think of the
Munson's.
Name.
Munson's
chocolate.
Munson's chocolates. Yeah.
So when you buy one of those and you drink it, you're drinking a local chocolate and a local beer all in one glass. It's kind of cool. So the different ingredients, different ways of doing local together. It's a great synergy.
Thimble Island also uses a local roaster for their coffee stout, I believe. So
interesting. Very good. Hey, any other questions or thoughts?
My name is Mike.
Hi there, Mike. What's on your mind?
I have a question about, I know collaborations have been pretty popular recently, especially with Vermont breweries and especially with Otter Creek and Lawson's Finest. And I know there's been some collaborations in Connecticut recently with Relic Brewing and Beard Brewing. I was wondering if there's any more collaborations in the works with such great breweries popping up in Connecticut.
That's a really good question. Do you guys know about any good collaborations happening between Connecticut breweries?
No, but it would be a wonderful thing. I think that what you've got are a lot of breweries that are brewing beer for other people, so there's an opportunity for them to work together. I don't know if that's been entertained, but right now the one that you had mentioned, Beard and Relic making their beers together, that was a wonderful collaboration. So I think that's something that hopefully will take off in the future. But
yeah,
I can't think of anything offhand.
In the past, I've seen Willimantic Brewing Company and Southport Brewing Company, two brew pubs, they did a beer together. I can't recall which beer it was. And I know that where there was some talk about doing a Connecticut collaborative beer for Connecticut Beer Week, which is coming up in November. So look at the calendar and the website for the events and that. Nothing set in stone on that. I think we should encourage the brewmasters that are here today to come up with a special beer for the radio show. That's what
I
think.
You know, we probably should have thought of that in advance, right? To have our own beer for this program.
Yeah. Where we drink. Sounds
good. Where we drink, yeah.
Yes, anywhere, no.
That sounds actually like the sort of show that I'd like. I haven't quite made it through my entire flight yet, so we still have time, I think, for one or two more questions. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Drew.
Hi.
So I spent some time in South Africa last year, and before then, I was perfectly fine with a Bud Light or what have you. But there, I found more of the beer was local and fresh. When I came back to America, I really couldn't have a Miller Light in the same way, and I found myself in the last year or so going out with my partner and having more of the local beers, and they were just more delicious. I guess it's not really a properly descriptive way of saying it, but it was better than just having the more commercial stuff. It was more flavorful and more interesting than just going out and having this, I guess, more for the masses kind of thing.
Yeah. Did you find your palate changing, or was it just, I mean, were you just experiencing new things, new flavors?
So I got the big beer there was Castle that I had, and I was in Cape Town, and I guess it wasn't much better largely than Bud Light, but it was fresher, and so I guess what I experienced coming back to Connecticut was I wasn't able to drink the commercial stuff that had been shipped around, I guess, or whatever, and I wanted something that felt a little bit more immediate and was a little more flavorful and a little more complex. So I grew to, and we've gone around now to God knows how many breweries. We went on a mini brewery tour and we went to see a comedy show a little while ago. But instead of being a beer snob, I guess, I'm more appreciative of the process itself, and which is why I'm here, and really having beer that feels like some effort went into it rather than just something for the masses. And it isn't just to have a beer that is better than, but a beer that just feels a little bit more worked on than just something else for everyone.
Well, and I think that he really raises the point that we try to get at before, and I think it's a good place to close our conversation too, is when you come to a place like this, you see them making the product that you're about to drink, and you get to talk with a person who put their heart and soul into it about whether or not this is a good beer for them or something that they want to try again or a good year or something that's going to be an experiment. You get a chance, well, I think, to really talk, much like you do with a farmer who is making your food, about the food that you're getting or the beer that you're getting. I think that's a really important thing an important connection for
a
lot of people.
It's the result is magical, but the process isn't magic. You are able to break it down into its components. And I liken craft beer a lot of times to music, in the sense that you're able to really strengthen all of your abilities as a musician to create something that is really going to change people's lives.
Yep. Brian, do you have a thought on this?
No, I mean, just to echo Will, I mean, he's absolutely right. And Drew nailed on the head. I think there's something special about going to a place that's making the beer fresh right there, getting to know the guy or gal making it, watching them make it, get the experience of the venue, get to know the people behind the beer. And I think when you share a good beer like that with a person who has passion about what they're making, the beer tastes all the better. And I think that's what you get all over the state when you go to these breweries.
If people want to find out about the Connecticut Beer Trail, where do they go?
Well, if you go to our website, it's ctbeertrail.net, or you can use the Connecticut Brewers Guild's phone app, and that's free for iPhone and Droid phones. You can download that off Connecticut.beer, which is the Guild's website, and they all kind of link together, all three of them. So come on out, check it out, and hope to see you on the trail.
Brian Turner, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I also want to thank Will Siss, who's the author of Connecticut Beer, A History of Nutmeg State Brewing. He's the guy who helped lead us through this entire conversation about craft beer. Thanks so much, Will. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
A special thanks to Bill Collins, the business manager and co-owner of Firefly Hollow Brewery. A big round of applause for Bill and everyone here at Firefly Hollow. Our program today was produced by Josh Nalea with help from Kyone Wolf and Katie Talarski. Our intern was Alex Dubin. I'm John Dankoski, and from Firefly Hollow Brewing in Bristol, Connecticut, this is Where We Live.